From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is going to be made this coming Sunday night, 7 p.m. at the Eastman Theater. It's the 6th annual induction ceremony for the Rochester Music Hall of Fame. A new class goes in, and you've got a chance to hear some of them. I would say meet some of them, but you know many of the members of the 2017 class. You're going to hear them in their own voices this hour, and we're going to hear about how the selection process happens. There's a lot to talk about. Rochester music, history, the state of music now, putting these ceremonies together. We got a show producer here who's going to be telling us who they're bringing in. Bruce Pilato is going to reveal everything this hour. In fact, let me introduce all of our guests. Bruce is one of them. He's a board member and show producer. And Bruce is the guy who, it's the reason the show goes like 7 hours every year, is because you pack so much into it.
Stop it.
It's nice to see you. I'm mostly kidding. It's like
actually,
five.
When I do my New Year's resolutions, usually at the top of the list is bring the show in at 3 hours.
Have you ever done it? Come on.
No, but we are under 3.5 the last couple, so we're working on it.
You know why? Because you get all these live performances, you get the audience into it, and then people want to talk. So it's a great show, and we're going to be talking about what Bruce has planned. Thank you, by the way. It's nice to see you. Nice having you back here.
It's always great to be here.
Jack Whittier is a board vice president, and he's going to be talking about what they have planned, from the inductees to the Douglas Lowry Award and more. Jack, welcome to the program. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Evan.
Joe Beard is here, 2017 inductee, a legendary blues musician whose career I could not do justice to if I started to read the accomplishments. So we'll just talk music coming up here. Joe, it's great to have you. Thank you for being here. Also here is Gary Lewis. He's a 2017 inductee, a 1960s hitmaker, still playing and giving us some great music, and great to have you. Thank you.
Nice to be here.
And on the phone with us is Samuel Adler, who is not only a 2017 inductee, he's a celebrated composer. Got a connection to just about everywhere in the world of classical music, professor emeritus at Eastman School of Music, he's on the composition faculty at the Juilliard School. But Samuel, on the line with us, thank you for taking the time to join the program. How are you, Sam?
Great pleasure to be there.
Well, Sam, I was saying to the people in studio here before we started, you know, we could talk to you about the fact that, you know, classical music has been declared dead so many times over the years, but it's still here. Should we be surprised in 2017, or should we stop trying to declare classical music on its deathbed?
Yes, I think you should stop trying to make the death so immediate. It's been here for about 3,000 years, and I think it's going to remain for a little while longer, at least for another few hundred years.
And as we look at your career now, Samuel, you know, your works have been performed around the world. There's so much that we could talk about. But what do you see as, you know, if you go back to your early years composing now to 2017, and I think we are at a point where we can get more adult about classical music, that it's, we've got classical 91.5 down the hall. It's not going anywhere. It's never going to be 98.9 and pop radio, but classical music is an important part of our fabric and culture. But how do you see it having changed over the decades since you have been involved with it, Sam?
Well, I don't think it has changed. I think it's become more intense because whether we know it or not, and I think our whole problem is PR. Our PR is not very good as far as classical music is concerned. We have the greatest talents in the world here in our country, and it's a wonderfully kept secret. My wife and I just came back. She conducted the All-State Orchestra in Texas. If you want to hear talent, our high school orchestras are as good as professional orchestras around the world. And this is really saying something, except we talk about nothing but the death of classical music instead of bringing forth the tremendous accomplishments of our youth in this country as far as classical music is concerned.
Sure, and if you read Alex Ross in The New Yorker, one of my favorite writers in the genre, he has been highlighting in recent months the way various festivals, classical festivals around the country, have been not just performing in really innovative ways and creating new works and sharing new works, but also occasionally works with a purpose. And that's not just a political moment. That's not a political commentary necessarily. But it's interesting just how diverse classical music has become if you're willing to look at it and stop sort of obsessing over the death of it, which has never happened.
It's always been diverse. There's no a period in the hundreds of years of history where it's not been diverse, even when it was sponsored by one organization like the church or the court. Take a man like Bach, who had so many different phases to his career. Even though he was a convinced Lutheran, he wrote a Catholic Mass as probably his greatest masterpiece. So, I mean, diversity on local and international levels have been there as long as classical music has been there. And also, I'm afraid the term classical music is what's holding back everything. Because I have a story to tell. When I was a student in Tanglewood 100 years ago, Aaron Copland was the master of ceremonies on the afternoon of Sunday afternoons when we had student concerts, that is, student composition concerts. And afterwards, he always asked for questions from the audience. Well, of course, the audience didn't want to ask the students questions. They wanted to ask Aaron Copland. So I'll never forget this lady got up and said, "Mr. Copland, why don't you write classical music?" So he said, "I'm glad you asked that, because you see, the classical era ended in 1827 with the death of Beethoven, and I was born thereafter." So, I mean, that really says it all. I mean, you know, we always talk about classical music, and people expect to have music like Mozart and Beethoven. Well, that hasn't been true for 200 years. We've written music for all kinds of things, and many of us have written music for children as well as for large orchestras and songs. We've even written, in our youth, we've all written pop songs. I did a lot of them. You know, so that the idea of having classical music put into a certain genre has been wrong, especially in America, because we think it really is extinct, while it is very, very much alive.
Sam, I wanted to ask you before I turn to some of our other panelists here, you know, what it means to have this induction as a 2017 class. And just a couple of days ago, I was talking to a friend about one of my favorite pieces of music. People know Tchaikovsky for sort of, the general public knows Tchaikovsky for the big flamboyant works, the big beautiful works. But I think Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto in D Major, number 35, if you want to look it up, especially as performed by Sayaka Shoji, if you want to find it on YouTube, you want to see this diminutive, structured woman just blow you away with the most amazing piece of music. And Tchaikovsky is not known very much for that, but if you go back and check out what the critics were saying, they were panning it. They said it was a mess, it was out of control, that no one could ever play it, that it was a disaster. And it wasn't until long after he died that people realized, wow, this is brilliant. Well, we don't have to worry about that with you, Sam, because here you are, you're a member of the 2017 Rochester Music Hall of Fame, and hopefully you're getting, you know, your due as your music is published, as your music is performed. And I wonder now what this kind of induction, you know, what it means to you in your career.
Well, I mean, it means a great deal because I have had a love affair with Rochester. No matter how bad the weather was, it was always a great pleasure to be at the Eastman School. I was there for 30 years. Our children were brought up there. And we have a great deal of love for the Rochester community. And I hope that I have done some kind of commitment to it, and also have given it something of my own work.
Sam, is there anything that you have created, anything that you have composed? And I know this is sort of a pick your favorite child question, but is there anything that you are most proud of or that delights you most when it is performed by other orchestras?
Well, I think you're asking me which of my daughters I like best.
Yeah, I kind of am, but everybody does have a favorite child, I've been told, so.
No, I really, you know, you always feel that the last piece you've written is the one you like best. At least I hope so.
Okay. Well, that's a very good political answer. I take the point, Sam. And let me ask Jack Whittier, who's the board vice president of the Rochester Music Hall of Fame. You know, this seems like a slam dunk induction, but sometimes when we think about the Hall of Fame, sometimes when we think about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, there's questions on, well, how come a hip-hop artist? Or how come, you know, why would we consider this genre or that genre? You're trying to keep music in mind across the board, I know.
Absolutely. So when we get together, we have a selection committee. Bruce is on it. I chair it, actually. And their homework is to bring at least five names of people that they want to consider. And we also have actually about a 55-page document that lists potential inductees. So we came to that first meeting, and I think in 10 minutes we had a total of 38 names. And what we really do is we start breaking them up into categories, because we really value the diversity of the show, and we want to honor musicians in all different genres because they all have a special place in the music world. So we kind of start dividing them up, and we start looking at them, and we want to get as many people here, you know, when they're still alive, you know, so we can honor them in person. So we really try to put a premium on that. We don't compromise our criteria at all. But, you know, we do keep that in mind. And then we just kind of go through the process and figure out what would be the most balanced show from a genre perspective, you know, what the content would be. We do have to sell tickets. I mean, we're not going to shy away from that. So we do try to have a little bit of star appeal in it. But, you know, when we get to people like Sam Adler, we have a bunch of people, you know, in the classical category, but he was a slam dunk. I mean, just when we started going through his career and you know, over 400 works and being at Eastman for 30 years, I mean, he was a really easy choice, and we're thrilled to have him coming in and honoring him this year. And by the way, interestingly, you mentioned the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. So one of our Lowry Award winners, when we did our in-person finalist interviews and performances, she played one of the movements from that.
Wow.
And one of the reasons she won, her name is Ella Kogis, and she's going to be a violin performance major at Eastman. One of the things that really impressed us as a committee was that she was willing to take chances with a piece like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was really neat to watch.
All right, we'll talk more about the Lowry Awards coming up here. Before we let Sam go, and because we want to talk to the other inductees as well, I want to mention the fact that you've got not only the inductees, but there's performances at the ceremony. And the performance at the ceremony with Adler in attendance, the Eastman School of Music graduate students will perform his 1999 composition, Piano Quintet for Piano and String Quartet, and the musicians will be the Upton String Quartet with Yu Yang Cheng on piano. So, Sam, how do you feel about that piece to be performed?
Well, I'm delighted that they are going to do it. A couple of them have played it before when I was at Eastman a few years ago, but I have to tell you, I heard it while I was there a couple of weeks ago while Nick Galusis recorded my guitar concerto, and they are doing a fabulous job, and I hope everybody enjoys it as much as I did when I heard it.
And Sam, I do want to ask you, I mean, I agree that classical has been more diverse and more present in our lives than maybe people want to give it credit for. But I also look at my 5-year-old and I want him to love classical music. And fortunately, I think he does. He likes all kinds of different music at different times. But what would you say about, you know, sort of raising kids to appreciate it? Are we doing a good enough job of that in this country?
No, I think the problem has been that our music in schools has suffered with cutbacks. You know, the first thing to go in when a budget is cut is music and art. This is very unfortunate because it's also eaten into our audiences, because we used to have, and in many places we still have, the best music education system in the world. And if that doesn't get better in many places because of budget cuts, we're going to be hurting as far as all of music is concerned, not only classical music, but all kinds of music are going to be hurt because kids will not appreciate what there is, what they can gain from doing music. And this is unfortunate, and that's my worry. And now that I'm retired, I'm working with a lot of people to try to fight this whole business of cutting the arts before anything else. I think that's very dangerous for the health of the child.
Well, Sam, congratulations on this induction and your great career and the work you continue to do. Thank you for taking the time for the program.
Well, thank you very much, and I will hang up and hope to meet everybody next Sunday.
You got it. See you Sunday. Samuel
thank
Adler,
you. Bye-bye.
2017 inductee and celebrated composer. The Rochester Music Hall of Fame's sixth induction ceremony is on April 30th, 7 p.m. at the Eastman Theater. Jack, people can get tickets how?
If you go to our website, rochestermusic.org, right on the homepage, there's a big red button that says Buy Tickets. That'll take you right to the Eastman Theater box office website. You can go in, pick your seats. We've got tickets ranging from $20 to $60. Some of the premium seats are getting a little sparse, but we still have, as they say, good tickets still available.
Very good. And Bruce Pilato's job is to produce a great show. And as you said, bring in a little star power. You got Paul Schaefer coming in for one from the Letterman Show. Get on that mic here. Look, I got to talk. Don't make me yell at the producer to get close to the microphone. That's your job. So Paul Schaefer is one. And Paul Schaefer's coming why, by the way?
He was very close with Lou Soloff. Mm-hmm. So some of the other inductees, obviously we know about Samuel Adler and Joe Beard and Gary Lewis. We're also inducting Lou Soloff, who was a founding member and the trumpet, main trumpet guy for Blood, Sweat, and Tears all through their glory years. The first four or five albums, I think he was in the band up through the mid-70s. And, really, there were two people that really drove BS&T in terms of the success they had. One was the singer, David Clayton Thomas, who had an unbelievable voice and sang those great songs like You've Made Me So Very Happy and Spinning Wheel and God Bless the Child and When I Die. And there were five hit singles on that one album. But the other person was Lou, because those trumpet lines were so distinct. And, one of the things that I'll probably talk about at the show, and I remember this when I was growing up, that was one of the albums that my mom would let me play, and she wouldn't yell, turn that music down, because she connected with it, because they did, Billie Holiday's God Bless the Child, which she always loved. And they were really the first band to bring jazz music to a rock audience in a large way. So, and a lot of that was Lou in those trumpet lines that he did. And, he knew he was going to get inducted because he was on our short list for many years. But because of his age, we figured, well, we got a little time. Unfortunately, he passed away 2 years ago, suddenly of a heart attack. And so we said, well, okay, it's too bad that he couldn't be here to enjoy it, but we're going to do this. So I called David Clayton Thomas, who I knew through his publicist, and he said, absolutely, I'll be there. And he's coming in to sing all those great songs.
Great.
And then we also, I have met Paul Schaefer a number of times through other clients I have. And Lou's daughter said, Paul was at the memorial service and he was very close with my dad. And they played together a lot, including the Saturday Night Live band at one point and the Blues Brothers. So, I reached out to him. I actually know Paul. And at first, he wasn't sure he could make it because he's on tour with the Letterman Band. Has actually cut an album, and they're out touring now.
Got something to do, man.
Yeah, but he said, what? I have that night off, and I'll be there. So he's coming in, and he's going to perform a solo piano song, which will surprise a lot of people because it's a song that is not affiliated with jazz in any way. But he used to do a jazz version with Lou, and then he's going to join the band and do the BS&T stuff. Him and David Clayton Thomas knew each other 50, 60 years ago, growing up together in Canada. So there's a connection there, too. It's going to be a great show.
And he's, there's all reasons in the world for them to say, I'm tired or I've got other things to do, I can't do it. I think it says a lot for Rochester and for this event that they're kind of going to be here, don't you, Bruce?
Well, you know, thanks to guys like Jack, you know, we've got the sponsorship. This is a first-class affair. We do this thing at the Eastman, and it's really well done in a very, very professional and uplifting manner. And, you know, we bring these guys in. They're not coming in for the money. I mean, there's a small honorarium that we give them, but primarily they're coming in because they love the event. And they want to honor these people. And as you know, over the years, we've had some amazing talent come in for this show. So it's going to be a fun show.
Okay. There,
well, and I'll say one of the things that's impressed me the most over the 6 years we've been doing this is really the willingness of musicians to come in and play and honor the people that are being inducted. I mean, that really speaks volumes for the music community. Kind of gets to what Sam was talking about, you know, the role music has in developing our kids and us as people and as a community. And the music community is really special that way, that, you know, it's a tight-knit group, and people that have crossed paths, you know, in prior years are willing to come in and do that and really have a great night of music and honor and be there for the people that have been important to them.
Can you tell me a little bit about the man sitting across from you and why he's being inducted first?
Jeez, I'm sure nobody knows anything about Joe.
Joe here. Yeah.
Has anybody in Rochester ever heard Joe play? Man, he's another one. You know, when we really got down to, you know, who are we going to have in this year? You know, Joe's playing just speaks volume. Who he's played with, just his work on his own, the number of people that come out and hear him play. I mean, how many years have you been playing in town, Joe?
30 years or more.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so you've been here and doing it on a high level. And, you know, when you mention blues in this town, Joe's name is at the top of the list.
Well, let's talk to Joe Beard a little bit now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's offensive that it took six classes to get you in, but I'll give them a pass here. Jack knew that was coming.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Hey, we always say, as long as they're talking about us, it's okay.
No. I kid. Joe, what does it mean to you to be inducted to the Rochester Music Hall of Fame?
Oh, that means everything to me. It does. It really does. You know, I'm so grateful that I was chosen this year to go in.
And for you, you look back at your career. Again, I could pick so many different things here, but kind of take me back to, what's your first memory of picking up an instrument?
Well, you know, I was like 12, 13 before I even picked up the guitar. But when I started playing the guitar, I was like 18. But first, I was a bass player before the guitar player. It's the best place first, you know. I used to listen to people like John Lee Hooker and people like that, you know. But, you know, I grew up with people like Matt Guitar Murphy. And I was spent a lot of time with B.B. King, you know. So, and the blues was always a part of me. You know, and I never got into doing it until like 18. I was a bass player with John Ellison, you know, for a long time, you know, but it wasn't really me.
The bass wasn't really you?
No. At that time, John, we was doing, like, all the radio stuff. James Brown, all those people, you know, but my heart was set at John Lee Hooker, Muddy Waters, Lightnin' Hopkins, Freddie King, guys like that, you know. But I enjoyed what I did with him. But to please myself, the blues is it.
And the blues is it?
Yes, the blues is it.
And why is that?
The blues is, to me, it's life. It's everyday life the blues is all about. A good blues song is singing about someone that you know has experienced what you sing about.
And so for you, Joe, what do we not understand about the blues? What do we get wrong about the blues?
That's a tough one. You know, some people look at the blues as sad, but that's not it. It's not it at all, you know, because a person that says, I got the blues, that's not really saying, I'm hurting. Yeah. It's a feeling that they have. You know, it can be a good feeling, or it can be down and out, you know what I mean? But they still call it the blues, even if you're down. People will say, that guy got the blues. You know? Then he can be happy. And, you know, and that's still the blues. But a blues is not something to be sad about. You know?
No, you give us a lot of joy. I also think about the musicians we've had a chance to talk to over the years, Rochester-based musicians, people like Steve Gadd. I had a conversation with Steve Gadd about great musicianship and how sometimes the best musicians, you know, they're not always. Sometimes they give you something really intricate, really complicated, it's really beautiful. But sometimes it's just the perfect response to the perfect moment of a song. You know, Steve Gadd, the way he opened 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, things like that, is maybe not the single most complex thing you ever do on a drums, but it's perfect. It's just, he thought about it, this is what works here. What to you makes for a great musicianship? Guitar, bass player, whatever it is, what makes a great musician, Joe?
A great musician, you know, it's not such as how great you are as your performance. Your personality and your, you know, and respect for other musicians and your audience, you know, means everything to a great musician, you know. Just, it's not that it makes a great musician by being great, you know what I mean? A great musician in the world with bad personality, he's lost.
You know. So were you a great, are you a great musician?
No.
Oh, I think people disagree.
Yeah. I'm not a great musician. You know, there's, now people's like, but a guy, great. You know, people's like that, you know what I mean? B.B. King and Freddie King and all those guys, you know. Ahead of people's like me, I can never be one of them.
Why not? I don't think I understand why you say that.
They can only be one buddy guy. That's the way I feel. You know, you could do anything you want to do with Buddy Guy's song, but it still's not Buddy Guy. Eric Clapton, you know what I mean? He's one of the greatest. He's one of the greatest, you know what I mean? Now, he gets very close to all of low guys, you know. But he still is not Robert Johnson. I'm Muddy Waters. You know what I'm saying? He's being himself. That's the most important thing in the world of being a musician, is being yourself.
Well, one of the things I think when you listen to the blues, you know, when you listen to the blues, you can say, geez, it's the same, you know, blues songs, it's the same chords, you know, same pattern in the songs. But guys like Joe, they put themselves into the music, and it's and there's almost a beauty in the simplicity of the blues, I think, that people like Joe, you know, there's a tendency, I think, a lot of times for musicians to kind of overplay sometimes. Yes. And when you hear Joe play, it's him, and there's just a beauty in the simplicity and what comes out of that, which is, I think, the trademark of a great blues player.
And so you're going to play on Sunday night?
Yes,
play with
I am.
Chris and Dwayne?
Yes, yes.
What are you going to play?
You know, we're going to do our couple of songs that I've written, you know what I mean? Our one is going to be Who Is Using Who? You know what? When I did that song, you know what I mean? The studio says, I've never heard that phrase, who is using who? But it's... What I'm saying is that it's a fact, what I'm saying. It's not something that I just stretch up and grab and pull at that. It's life, you know. Who's using who?
You're a philosopher too, Joe.
No, I'm not.
Can we listen to a little bit of Joe Beard in 2008, Little by Little, live Wonderful. At the Hot Blues for Homeless, a tribute to Sunhouse. So let's listen to, you know, maybe 30 seconds or so, and then we'll drop down the music underneath us. We'll talk about it. Let's listen. So as we continue to listen here, Joe, you know, it's so tight. How much do you need to pick up with the band and practice before you get on stage? Or at this point now, you just kind of look at each other with a look and you just go? And it's,
yes.
Yeah, yes, that's it. You know, that's it, right?
For sure. Yes, you know, you can... A blues band, you know, if you got a band playing the blues, you know, and you can walk in... Pick up the guitar and hit the first couple of notes, they know exactly where you're coming from.
but does, you know, sort of similar to what when we talk about jazz and improvisational and who's sort of not dominating but kind of at the forefront of different moments, does that happen in blues? Do you look at somebody and you kind of, you're going to step back now, you're just going to kind of keep playing and somebody else is going to kind of step forward with a moment? Or how are you responding to other musicians?
Well, you know, if there's, you would always step back, you know, and give that person an opportunity to do his thing,
yep.
You know, and the important thing is don't overplay this guy that's ahead of you, you know, no matter how good or how bad he is, let him feel though he's doing his thing and let him, let the artist be the one to make that decision. No musician can make himself great. That's not what it's all about. It's the audience that counts.
We all know somebody who wants to dominate, though, right? We've all been on stage with somebody
who
just can't.
Oh, yes, for sure. I sure have.
Well, Joe, I hope you have a great time Sunday night, and boy, that's going to be fun. Bruce, you want to add to what you're thinking about with Joe performing on Sunday?
Well, you know, he's a legend, not only here but in the blues community at large, and you know, he's one of the most humble guys I've ever met. I mean, you know, I deal with a lot of celebrities, and I'm, you know, there's a lot of divas out there,
yes,
that are male and female.
Right, we're going to get to Gary in our second half hour.
but Joe is one of the nicest guys I've ever had the pleasure to deal with. And, you know, just close your eyes and listen to it. It's the real deal. It's the real thing.
Yeah. Joe, before we turn to Gary here, have a little fun with him. Who is the best musician you ever played with?
Well, overall, I think Buddy Guy would be.
Buddy Guy.
Yes. Yes, because Buddy, he's not just the guy that walks on stage and you hear what he does, you know what I mean? But there's so much behind him. But there's another one, too, the guy that I practically grew up with, Matt Guitar Murphy. You know, those guys. But there's many great musicians, you know what I mean? But those two guys, I think they're... Eric Clapton, I can't leave him out.
Eric Clapton's okay.
No, he's great. Yes, he is, gentlemen, but that is... But to stand beside the guy that I think is the best would be Buddy Guy.
I think Rochester is lucky to be inducting you, and I agree with Bruce, you know, just your humility is amazing for a man of your talent. Is there somebody out there that you think, boy... This is somebody whose personality is even better than people understand. This person is a better person than people understand. Is there somebody that you played with over the years that you wish we all could get to know the way you got to see them?
Well, I think one of the people that Matt Murphy would be one of those guys. He would be. He's because if Matt, he was strictly Matt Murphy, on stage or off stage. That's Matt Murphy.
That says a lot about a person, doesn't it? That
yeah,
there you
does.
See them on stage. That's
yes,
who they
does.
Are.
And yes.
The other connection too is that Matt was the guitar player in the Blues Brothers.
Yes.
So
was.
There's the connection with Schaefer, because you know Schaefer was the keyboard player in that as well. So there's it's weird how it's all kind of a full circle thing here.
We're going to take our only break of the hour, and you just heard Bruce Pilato, who's a Rochester Music Hall of Fame board member and the show producer. Jack Whittier is here, the board vice president. You heard Joe Beard, a 2017 inductee and the legendary blues musician. We're going to talk to Gary Lewis in a moment, also a 2017 inductee. We had a chance to talk to Samuel Adler, the celebrated composer, who is on the 2017 class. And the ceremony is April 30th, 7 p.m. at the Eastman Theater. You can get tickets now where?
Rochestermusic.org. Click buy tickets. It'll take you right to the website. You can pick out your own seat.
Very good. Tickets ranging from $20 to $60 on sale right now, also at the Eastman Theater box office. So let's get that break and come back and continue the conversation on the 2017 class of the Rochester Music Hall of Fame. And let me tell you what's coming up Thursday on the next Connections. We're going to be joined by Deputy Mayor Cedric Alexander in our first hour. He's going to talk about Mayor Lovely Warren's State of the City address. Then in our second hour, we're going to talk to survivors of the Holocaust. They're in Rochester as part of a 30th anniversary celebration of the WXXI documentary Safe Haven. The film is about Fort Ontario in Oswego, which took in nearly 1,000 refugees during World War II. That's all tomorrow. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. They're taking pictures in studio, and eventually you can see all these musicians and the folks involved with the Rochester Music Hall of Fame Sunday night. They've got their annual induction ceremony coming up. And Gary Lewis, what does that mean to you to be part of the 2017 class?
Well, let me start out by saying that 20 years ago in 1997, I played at the Eastman Theater with my band, and I met my wife there. And since then, we've never played back at the Eastman Theater. So now, 20 years later, to be inducted into the Rochester Music Hall of Fame, where I lived, I have lived in Rochester for the last 20 years, is a tremendous honor to me. And I'm thrilled to death that my name came up. And Rochester is it's my home, and I absolutely love it here. And I'm staying.
Gary Lewis and the Playboys had 8 gold singles, 17 top 40 hits, 4 gold albums. How many records sold worldwide? What do you say? What's the number you say?
Oh, well, initially in the late 60s, it was 45 million. But after that, it's probably way, way up there now.
And so was there ever a moment for you when you were, you know, sort of trying to make it, right, in the music scene?
Right.
And was there a moment where you were in a car or somewhere, and all of a sudden you go, wait a second, that's my song. That's playing. Like, we must have made it. That this is actually happening. Was there ever a moment like that for you?
When I heard my
song? Yeah, when you heard your music, but you weren't the one playing it.
Oh. as a matter of fact, no, that never happened. Not a lot of people did my stuff.
No, I mean, you know, whether you were on the radio or did you have a moment where it was like, wow, you know, we're in demand now. You know, Gary Lewis and the Playboys is happening.
Oh, you know? Oh, sure, sure. I mean, that was right after our first hit, This Diamond Ring. And we were so excited and flipping out. My producer said, you better calm down because, you know, do you realize how many one-hit artists there are out there?
warning you, don't get ahead of yourself.
Exactly,
huh?
Right. He said, if we get a second hit and a third hit, then we could be on our way. Then you can get excited.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of This Diamond Ring. It wasn't just one hit, by the way. Here it is. This Diamond Ring was a smash, but did that conversation with the producer, did that make you think, boy, we don't want to be a one-hit wonder?
No, most definitely not. I put my entire trust into him, And our arranger, who was Leon Russell, he arranged everything that we did. Snuffy Garrett knew how to pick hit songs and when to put them out. He had no failures. In the 50s, he had Johnny and Dorsey Burnett. In the 60s, he had Gene McDaniels, Bobby V, myself. And then he went on to do Cher and Frank Sinatra and stuff like that. So he earned my trust by the people that he handled before. So I knew he was going to do good for us.
I mean, you were barely, what, even 20 years old, or maybe not even, when you won Male Vocalist of the Year in 1965 over Elvis and Frank Sinatra?
Right, isn't that something?
Yes,
when I heard the nominees, something. I was almost out of the room. I said, I'm leaving.
How old? You were a young guy.
I was 19.
19
yeah.
years old.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I know it is.
Yeah. What did that mean to you?
Oh, it meant that I'm blessed heavily. That's exactly what that meant to me.
That was a time where, 65, so, well, the Beatles did the Sullivan thing in February of 64, I think.
Right.
So they were on the scene. What was really turning you on, not just as a musician, but what did you like to listen to at that time in the mid-60s? What do you remember being hot?
Oh, geez, Del Shannon, Freddie Cannon, you know, all the pre-Beatles music in the early 60s, I loved it all. But when the Beatles came out, that made up my mind for me what I wanted to do. That was it. I heard the Beatles and I said, well, I'm putting a band together and I'm going to try to do something because this is what I want to do. I had that feeling like something just hit me like, this is what you need to do. So I just followed that.
And you heard Joe talking about, you know, that you can say you're a great musician, but the audience decides.
Absolutely.
You know, it's up to the audience to decide. And did you love that feeling of the audience reaction to the music?
Yes, I definitely did. When I started in the 60s, it was all fun and yeah, this is great, wow, you know, and all that, you know. But over the years, you know, all that calms down and gets into a position where you wanna do the best you can for those people, you know, and it's not just getting the screams and having people throw things on stage for you to pick up and just throw back, you know.
I'm not gonna ask you what they were throwing.
Yeah, well, I
this is a family show.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So, you know, to do the best you can for the people now, and to do all those songs exactly the way they remember them, is exactly what I'm into.
Yeah, I mean, it's 2017. There's people not only still listening to your music, I still hear your music on radio sometimes. What is it like for you now when you hear your music on the radio?
Now it's really exciting because it's 53 years later.
That's pretty cool, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it sure is.
You talk about longevity.
Yep.
And so what's coming up on Sunday night? Tell me about what we're going to hear on Sunday.
Well, we're going to do four of the biggest hits that we had. We're going to do This Diamond Ring, Count Me In, Everybody Loves a Clown, and She's Just My Style. And those were the four biggest ones.
And you still love to do them, or you know?
I do.
You do.
I absolutely love to do them.
No,
I mean,
no fatigue.
Oh, absolutely not. You know, I don't know how people can get tired of doing what gave them their whole life. You know, how do you get tired of that?
I think that's a great disposition to have. And I'm trying to figure out over the years how many times you would have performed This Diamond Ring live.
Oh,
I mean, you couldn't even count. It's impossible, right?
No, it's impossible. But, you know, just like when people ask you questions, they say, oh, you've probably heard this question many times before. Well, yes, I have. I've heard the question a billion times, but you're only hearing the answer for the first time. Same with the songs. They're hearing the song for the first time by us.
The industry now, it's in an interesting place in that, you know, artists are trying to figure out how to make a living. Everybody wants content for free, Gary. People want to throw everything online. And
I know.
And it's hard. If you're not one of the big, big names, it's hard to make a living right now.
Well, that's true. You know, and just about 2 or 3 years ago, we recorded a new song, and we didn't want to go with the record companies. You know, so we just put it on iTunes on the computer. because we're not trying to make tons of money. I just want our fans to know we're not dead.
I'm sorry. it's a nice thing to do.
Which is the truth.
Yeah.
Here's a new song
I'm still here.
From
yes.
us. I'm still here. I still think. You know, and so here's a new song.
Gary, I did not think when they announced that you were going to the Rochester Music Hall of Fame, I was not one of the people who was like, oh, that would have been nice if they got him when he was still alive.
Yeah.
I know you're still alive. I'm very excited that you're here. It's great. But now you have the advantage of when you want to record, you know, that is the great sort of egalitarian thing about iTunes. Anybody can actually get it out there.
Well, sure they can.
The difference is if you're actually trying to make a living.
Yeah.
So when you think about modern artists and how the industry has changed, what are the biggest changes you see from 50 years ago to now?
Well, on a lot of music of today, nobody needs talent. That's what I see.
Wow, that's strong.
Well, look at all the auto-tune stuff that's happening. Nobody needs talent. You're in perfect key, you know. I don't
like the way the auto-tune sound, by the way. But
well, I don't either, yeah. You know. Whoever likes the music of today, God bless them. That's fine with me. But I don't really care for it. You know, there's no substance.
And so you're saying the bar's low. So, you know, is there any going back? Are we going to value talent again?
Well, I really don't know. That I just don't know. I don't know where things are going to go. All I can do is be very, very thankful that I've lasted for 53 years and people are still coming out to see us and you know, I have my career.
This is the get off my lawn portion of the program. but let me just say before Bruce jumps in here, you know, my 5-year-old, he likes some pop music. I'll listen to some here and there. I take the point that you're making, though. There's a lot of really formulaic, not all that talented stuff that does get to the airwaves these days. I think a lot of the great talent is going to the other genres that aren't pop music, you know, whether it's what we would call classical, blues, jazz, that kind of stuff, the more experimental, the really interesting stuff. And pop music, the bar is a little bit lower. It's more like looking for a formula, a 3-chord formula, you know, reprogrammed every
That's
6
right.
months or so.
That's right.
But you know, I don't mean to be too get off my lawn. Go ahead, Bruce. Yeah,
well, you know, the point I want to make, being in the industry myself, and I also teach at a couple of the universities in the area about music industry, is that, you know, up until about 10 or 15 years ago, the center of every artist's universe was the new album. Your tour was based on it. Your media was based on it. You know, your fans, you know, just waited for the new album. And it was part of a catalog that you built that, you know, bands like Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and stuff like that. I mean, you know, you bought that album whether you heard it or not. It's like, it's a new Led Zeppelin album. I got to buy it. Okay, now the center of the universe is the live performance, is the tour. And if you can't go out there and strap on a guitar and sing and play music that entertains people, you're going to have a very short career. The record is really just a byproduct now. It's they don't make much money off records anymore unless you're maybe Lady Gaga or somebody like that.
Yeah.
It's really just used to get press to help promote the tour. And the interesting thing about guys like Gary Lewis is that, you know, he had that long catalog, that longevity. And, you know, if he didn't put out an album for 10 years, he could still draw a lot of people because they want to hear those great songs.
And still do, and can, on April 30th, which is great. 4 performances from Gary Lewis and the Playboys. And by the way, Bruce, you know, to the point you're making about when Zeppelin puts an album out, you got to go buy it. Well, now, everything sort of leaks online, or it's easy to find. There's less of an impetus to buy and consume an entire album anymore also.
You know, it's back to a singles business.
Yeah, I think that's why vinyl is having this resurgence, because people are remembering that, wow, we used to listen to the entire album. And sometimes it had a sort of a story arc or things to share. And there's something kind of cool about that. Well, we've eaten up most of the time. By the way, Gary, congratulations to you and have fun on Sunday.
Thank you. Oh, I will.
You know, it is still fun to hear the music on the radio. And I know you're going to have a blast. What else did we miss here? We've got 2 minutes. Jack, Bruce, we didn't even get to the fact that
Jack Bruce.
He's in Cream.
Uncle Roger McCall posthumously inducted, which is a great story. Tell real briefly, Bruce.
Well, basically, we're inducting them separately. Roger was the night graveyard shift guy on WCMF, but he spearheaded a show called Homegrown, which, you know, got a lot of area musicians their first exposure on radio. And then, you know, that exposure came in terms of a live performance, usually at the Penny Arcade, which was run by a great guy by the name of Greg Sullivan, who, by the way, had a lot of major artists in there, like Bon Jovi and Huey Lewis and the News and Iggy Pop. And all
Bon Jovi played the Penny Arcade?
Yes, he did.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, in fact, one of the bands I used to manage opened for him. And wow. and it was in many cases it was a routing date for artists in between the bigger cities. But what we're going to do is combine the musical segment of both of those inductions into we basically assembled the greatest supergroup of area musicians, and they've written original songs about these two men that are going to be performed, and it's really going to be spectacular.
Oh, that's really cool stuff. Very, very cool stuff. And in our final 30 seconds or so, Bruce, anything else about the show you want the audience to know before they decide to grab tickets?
You know, every year we say, how are we going to top this one? But every year we seem to do it, thank goodness, and people keep coming. All I can tell you is if you love these classic songs of Gary and the great blues of Joe, and of course the amazing music of Blood, Sweat, and Tears, please come to the show. Because, you know, to hear those songs sung by the people who made those records, it's pretty special.
7 p.m. at the Eastman Theater for the 6th Annual Induction Ceremony. And, Jack, one more time, you can get tickets where?
You can go to our website, rochestermusic.org, hit buy tickets, and it'll take you right to the website, buy your tickets there, and we'll see you at the show.
Have fun. Thank you so much for being here, Jack. Greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And Bruce, always fun. Yeah, I know you're going to produce a great show. You always do. Thanks for being here. Always enjoy that and the history. Gary, thanks for the great stories and the great music. We'll see you Sunday. Thank you. And Joe Beard, I sort of feel like I'm not worthy. I just enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for sharing your insight.
And thank you so much.
You can see all of them Sunday night. Great stuff here. Our thanks to Kat Schwarz, the engineer of the broadcast, and Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you Thursday on Member Supported Public Radio.